Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets remain resilient against a backdrop of bad news. Governments signaling they have our backs. New geopolitical tensions are rising and the shape of the recovery is in question. All this and much more on episode number 663 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey there. Thanks for joining in on the conversation today. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I'm president and founder of Horowitz & Company, an investment advisory firm, of course, and your host of this podcast that we've been doing for close to, what are we talking about here? I guess 12 years and running pretty strong. Thank you so much. Matter of fact, I just saw that there's a ranking in the Apple iTunes, which is the longest running podcast site that has hosted or at least distributed podcasts for many, many years. And I just saw that we are ranked number 26 all-time high in the investing category for the Apple iTunes podcast. That's pretty good. So I want to thank you for listening. Also, of course, on Tuesday nights, I do DH Unplugged with John C. Dvorak. And we talk about, well, the lighter side of news, kind of talking about what's going on with regard to the markets, of course, in finance, just like we do here, but we dig in a bit of a different way. We play some really cool games, and listeners have a chance to chat with us live as well. So that's over on DH Unplugged, live streaming, actually, on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. every Tuesday night. Been doing that for about 10 years with John. So we have a lot of fun. Let me tell you, by the way, we have a lot of fun. There is limericks that we do on that, and we have listeners send in their Fed limericks. We talk about the underside of what's really behind the, not only the headlines, but the underside of what's really going on with the news and how to discern. We have some stock tips segment towards the end of the show and games that we play like closest to the pin, where you have the opportunity to win a really one-of-a-kind t-shirt that we do. Just some really fun things, just a lot of fun. So I hope you do join us there as well. There were some questions that came in over last weekend. I think last weekend we had a really great show, and that particular show focused in on the idea of how to get back into the markets. The whole, well, I'm out and I don't know what to do now. Things are too high, and when things are too low, I don't really want to get in. And we went through a process that you could use. And we're going to talk about that again a little bit more because there was some clarifications and some questions. But one of the questions that came in several times over the last week or so, well, you know, if I want to do this, Andrew, if I want to work with you, what's the minimum size portfolio to get started? And what we did, particularly for the listeners, because we do have several different strategies, was that we brought down the minimum. So pretty much anybody can get involved. It's a $10,000 minimum investment through the Investology platform. And you can see a lot more of that over on either a link from the Disciplined Investor to scroll down, you'll find that, or directly at investology.com. This is our answer to the robo-advising out there that's pretty much just computer-driven. Well, what we did was we used the best of that and the technology that's behind the whole robo-advisory platform and added to that an overlay of a investment manager who's watching over what's happening. So it's, as I call it, advisor crafted and technology enhanced so that you get the best of both worlds. You get the ability to work on it in terms of your classification of risk and all that. But anyway, I don't want to take up too much time with that, but I think it's really important that you know that and then answer that question. So with that, I also want to tell you, yep, here we are. It's Memorial Day. It doesn't feel like the same Memorial Day that we've had in the past, but it is Memorial Day. So happy summer to you. Again, it's on the calendar. It says Memorial Day. But depending on where you are and what state you're in, what sector you're in, are you close to the beach, away from the beach, and forgetting about weather. Let's just put that aside. Forget about that any Memorial Day historically could be beautiful, hot, cold, rainy. Who knows? But this Memorial Day is just so much different because there's so much pent up desire to get the hell out of our houses, out of our square that we've been confined to for such a long time that people are really desirous of going out. Of course, it's a time of the year where we have backyard barbecues and hangouts and getting together with friends, sporting events, gatherings with relatives. I mean, there's all this that goes on traditionally. This weekend in particular, I think, and Labor Day, are the two that mark the kind of the beginning and end of summer. And, you know, again, I live in the summertime all the time down here in Florida in terms of weather. But still, you know, I remember the days when Memorial Day was like, oh, school's almost over. Labor Day is when school began right after the Jerry Lewis telethon was on over the weekend. We would go right back to school after Memorial Day when I grew up in New York. But this Memorial Day, I'm not sure how it's going to go. Hopefully you have some opportunity to have some fun and, of course, with safety in mind, right? That's the big issue right now. That's what's changing all this. The idea that we have to socially distance, wear masks, gloves, only go to a restaurant with certain occupancy requirements, maybe or maybe not go to the beaches, maybe or maybe not go to anywhere that we want to just take a walk, a park. So just have some fun. Get out there, do something safely, right? Don't be one of these. I took the boat this weekend and we just took a tour like I've been doing every Saturday night just to get out. And we went to the restaurant that we always go to, which is 20 minutes by boat from my house. And that restaurant was closed, which I don't really understand. I have to kind of do a little more digging into why that was. But that restaurant was closed, which I thought was weird because we're starting to reopen more. So we went down another 10 minutes down the river and went to another restaurant that I've been to before. I pulled up and I was like, wow, this place is not only open, it's really open. So I went up there, put my mask on. I went up there to get a menu. I said, hey, can you deliver to the boat? No problem, because it's pretty close. The dock is pretty close to the restaurant. And I noticed that the outside pavilion was full. Not only was it full, nobody was wearing masks. I mean, the food servers, the managers had either masks or some kind of facial covering on, as well as gloves. Okay. But the patrons, and yes, how do you eat and drink without masks on? But they were not at a 50% occupancy, this restaurant. No, 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 no. This was like 90%. Every table outside had people. So that's good from one aspect that people are going out doing their thing and able to get out there and that restaurants are doing okay. I asked the managers, hey, how you doing? What's happening? Right now is the first night. We got some people in here. But it's been a pretty rough haul. They had a full menu, by the way. They were doing a great job. But I just want to make sure that, of course, well, you should make sure. I'm only in charge of myself, right? I can only do what I can do, myself and my family. But just go out there and be safe. Do what you can. But it is interesting that we're seeing some places do well and some places do really poorly. And I think that is going to be exactly, even though I only went to two places, what we're going to see out there. There's going to be places that are going to do really well through this process, bringing people back, whether it's certain restaurants or regions or cities or towns or states, and certain that are going to be, well, maybe more concerned, maybe more dubious about going out and partying, at least until we get a little bit more clearing and an understanding of what's happening out there and how the current reversal of the lockdowns goes. As it is Memorial Day, of course, next week we have a short week in observance of the holiday. So Monday, the markets are closed. There'll be no economic information around the world. Other markets will be open. But in the United States, yes, the equity markets, bond markets are closed. Now, last week, markets staged a nice rebound because the week before that, We saw some kind of slowdown, a move lower, nothing terrible. But there was plenty of drivers on all fronts that were really pushing and pulling markets, as we have seen. The headline barrage is unbelievable. But I would say that there's an incredibly pervasive undertone that sounds a lot like, I would call it, capitulation. Or it could be just lazy analysis. I don't know. Either one of the two. So as I'm watching, as I'm reading, as I'm observing, clearly markets have shown a I would say it's an extraordinary, an out-of-bounds resilience in the face of the drop in earnings and really poor economics. There's no question about that. I mean, nobody's denying that. And that they're so bad that each one of them that comes out, in particular the economics, not only here but around the world, every single economic report that's been coming out for the month of April, essentially in front of the result, you could put the word historic. A historic, I mean, from retail sales to unemployment levels to initial claims. I mean, we're not there on an unemployment level yet. We're not at a historic level. But, you know, you look at the drop in retail sales and the drop in income and spending and the drop in manufacturing on a regional basis and, you know, all these numbers in the ISM services, they're all historically low. But yet, again, we have this unbelievable resilience that's happening. And I started to kind of really dig into some of this and try to understand what's going on. So you start reading some of the analysis and listening to what people are saying over the past week or so. And there's no question there's an incredible amount of confusion, right? I mean, we've talked about this. This is it's very difficult to say, well, stocks should be a lot higher right here. Stocks should be a lot lower. And I can give you reasons for both. And there's all this confusion that's in the market. And I think that a lot of people, especially in the analyst community, are just throwing up their hands and saying, you know what? Let's just make some excuses because the market's moving, and I could tell you maybe, and I'm thinking, well, my target should be a lot lower, but let me just give some reasons why the market should be going higher. Because, well, it is going higher. So a lot of them are like, well, the Fed, you know, the Fed is at a historic low, and when you look at the interest rates at zero, and you look at that being in the same level for years to come, as signaled by the Fed, well, we have to adjust our models, and therefore stocks make a lot more sense and valuations can go a lot higher. I mean, I assume that you could then suggest that if, in fact, you have a market of stocks that are earning zero, it's still better than the alternative because you could discount back the price. And I don't know. You know, you can make up all sorts of excuses. Then you have the one that's coming up this week. The big one that's coming up this week is, hey, there's money on the sidelines. Lots of money, trillions of dollars on the sidelines. We hear this a lot. I remember these discussions. I mean, the problem is they don't give you the full picture. The fact is that for many, many years, for forever, there's always been money on the sidelines. Yes, sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. The idea they're trying to get to and to provide you with this basis of their analysis and thinking that it should be a very bullish environment due to that is that that money has to find a home eventually. And where's it going to go? Well, it's going to go and it's going to leak into the areas that have the best opportunity for the future. Therefore, this money on the sidelines, whether it's because of just savings that have gone in, not being put into the market for some time, or maybe people that pulled money out of the markets and were waiting for a better time, better valuation, a clearing of some sorts to come back in, have now have it on the sidelines. And therefore, what they're going to do is eventually move it back in. Therefore, again, it tells you that when you do have market drops, there's an instantaneous reaction. Hey, you know what? We got a 2% move down, a 3% move down. Let's get some money to work. So that's the second thing. The other thing they talk about is the bearishness out there. The idea that there's a lot of bearishness out there and therefore that is a contrarian indication of where we are. Because the more people that are bearish, the more people potentially could become bullish. That's the idea. When you have a situation when, let's just stretch this out and say, everybody is bullish. Everybody, 100%, if there's such a thing. There's never such a thing. But if there was the time when you can have 100% of the people bullish out there. There's no one else to be bullish. Who else is left to buy stocks? So the contrarian methodology or theory in this is that there's going to be the potential for, in that scenario, too many people are hot, too many people are on, too many people are bullish. Well, there's not much more that can go into the market. So therefore, potential for a drop coming forward. On the other hand, if you have everybody that's, or a lot of people that are bearish, well, you can get, of course, get more bearish, but the contrarian concept here is that you'll have a lot more people becoming bullish over time, therefore putting their money to work. Therefore, if there's money on the sideline and you have interest rates that are low, kind of add this all together. Wow, shouldn't we be bullish now? Even though we know there's a lot of really ugliness still to come. So the final thing is, the final excuse, or the final thing that people have been talking about, let's just ignore this quarter's numbers. Man, last quarter, look at what happened during the first quarter. I mean, we saw companies beat and revenues better. Things were really good. And you know what? If it just wasn't for this lockdown, this coronavirus, this horrible situation on a global basis, things would have been just fine. Now, when we have that and we add into it that we have a very, very dovish Fed, and we have an incredible amount, at least we know, $3 trillion flowing in from fiscal stimulus, and the Fed buying junk bonds and municipal bonds and quantitative easing, which they are slowly but surely laying off of, by the way. A couple of weeks ago, it was $8 billion a day. Then it was seven, then it was six. This next week, $5 billion a day. And it's a shortened week. So they're going to be buying less than they bought in the last 4 weeks. However, if we just ignore this quarter's numbers and focus on after the second quarter, where we may see that there is some kind of resurgence of getting back to normalcy, normality, whatever, right? Or at least not this lockdown, then maybe we could see our way. And I think, by the way, there's been a bit of a pull forward. Companies that are beating by such a wide margin is a little bit strange, considering even if their quarter ended somewhere in March or even April, I think there was a bit of a pull forward, or at least of a bring forward of some of the things that happened maybe towards the end that they were going to book, and they brought it into the first quarter, knowing that most investors and analysts are going to tell you, just chuck the second quarter's numbers. Like it never even happened. Like it's never going to happen. Like don't look. So if we don't look, we don't see, we don't know, and therefore, you know what? It's not so bad. I mean, these are the baseline concepts that are trying to be brought forward to provide us for the excuse why markets should be going higher, considering all of the bad news that's there already and the potential for all the bad news that's coming. And finally, there's this new discussion, brand new discussion that's been brought out. It's pretty, I would say, the newest one. You got to keep on bringing these things out to keep people interested, the carrot that we've always talked about. So this new wave of investors is what's being thought about. You know, young people have never seen a drop in their life, or at least never seen it in their portfolio, because they've just been saving for a while now and decided that thinking, well, you know, maybe what I should do is I should think about getting involved in this, because look at this big drop we just saw in these stocks. And maybe this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and let's push in and buy anything out there. And you can see the new accounts being opened. It's a little bit strange, but all the brokers that we work with, whether it's TD Ameritrade or Interactive Brokers, matter of fact, Interactive Brokers can't keep up with the new accounts that are opening up. Think about that. Just for a moment, let's take a pause. The brokers, in a time of economic strife, where it looks like we're going into one of the worst recessions that we've ever seen, with earnings dropping off a cliff, at least for the next couple of quarters, new accounts are being opened up like never before, to a point that they have to put new and additional staff on to keep up with the demand. Huh? I mean, that is pretty amazing. And if you think about it, in a way, it makes kind of sense that people that were sitting on the sidelines for a long time, although they're sitting on the sidelines without an account, okay, where are they? Then the banks, they're realizing they're never going to get any interest rate in the banks. It was starting to tick up a little bit there for a little while, and then all of a sudden it's nothing. So while we're not seeing the full brunt of the storm for many companies, I want you to think about something. I want you to think about where we are. And I want you to relate this to a storm, a hurricane. This is kind of a hurricane that lasts every day, all day for 3 or 4 months. And one of the things that I'm really having a trouble with is the idea that we're trying to assess damage on the economy and on companies in a time when the storm hasn't passed yet. So let's kind of think about this hurricane concept for a second here. And let's go through just a quick exercise to put this in perspective in a way that I think we could all understand this just a little bit better. And we all know about storms. And let's say, you know what? There's a storm approaching. And when that storm approaches, whether it's a, you know, some kind of a horrible typhoon or a hurricane, there's fear. There's real fear because there's an unknown. We don't know how bad this is going to be. We don't know the potential for the damage. We know it's going to be high, and we see it all over the news. We see, oh, it's going to be, you know, you got to lock down everything. You got to evacuate. You got to get out of town. Low-lying areas are a problem and, you know, certain things. And again, think about this as I'm talking about this. Think about the markets. Think about the analysts that are telling us there's going to be record unemployment. Think about all the things that are put into this. So there's real fear. We have the potential for our house getting wrecked. But trying to assess the damage before the storm hits its hardest, if not the height of it, is difficult, if not absolutely, totally impossible. But we prepare anyway. We're in preparation for making sure that our house is in order and our property is in order, and the storm comes. It ravages houses and neighborhoods. And we don't know where the end of it is because we get the first rung and then we get a little bit of a breather and then we get the second part of it. But yet, where we are now, exactly right now, by the analyst community when it comes to stocks and the economies, we're trying to assess damage before this storm passes. Could you imagine trying to provide an insurance adjuster a damage report, or them coming in during the storm and trying to give you the full report and the complete and final report as the storm is still swirling around overhead to a point that they say, yeah, you know what? You have $30,000 worth of damage. You're like, hold. How do you know? Well, I can see what's happening. We saw the storm. And you're like, yeah, but the storm's not over yet. How are you assessing damage? We don't know what is actually going to see even further damage due to the fact that maybe there was some weakening in the pipes, there was some weakening in the walls, and just a couple of days later, this may all fall down. You're telling me that you're trying to analyze and give me a total valuation of this before the storm passes? We don't have any idea about the final result. And you're trying to give us all the numbers and tell us, you know what? Don't worry about earnings. We're going to see a 5-10. As a matter of fact, there was a, finally, we saw the analysts cut their target for the S&P 500 for 2021, dropped it down to about 150. Markets didn't seem to care. But again, constantly trying to provide the outcome before we know when this is all over. So analysts are trying to give us estimates of the damage with a time frame for the result, right? This is why it took all the way to this week just to get that reduction of 2021 earnings. But again, the storm hasn't passed. So yeah, we're opening up again, and we don't know if there's going to be any tornadoes that kick up from the edges of this hurricane that we're talking about. And again, putting the concept of an actual storm with a storm on the economy. Because we don't know if people are willing to consume or go out at the rate they were before, how long it's going to take. We don't know if there's going to be flare-ups like those tornadoes that kick up on hurricanes. We don't know how long that we're going to see partial or complete lockdowns, or if we get beyond phase one, phase two, phase three, and what that looks like on the other side. But again, analysts are trying to give us what those numbers are going to be. Even companies have said, you know what? We're pulling 2020. We're just pulling the rest of the year. They may have only provided one quarter's worth of data, but they're like, we have no visibility here. But yet we're trying to be corralled as investors to believe that all things are going to get better the end of this year, if not the third quarter. And then by 2021, everything is going to be just fine. Everybody back in the pool. I don't think so. Trying to project earnings when companies have told us that they've pulled their guidance is just a fool's errand. I mean, it's just probably one of the craziest things. And predicting that this is the depth of the economic damage that will result in a swift recovery, I mean, I find it very hard to believe. I'm not suggesting that we are not going to see a rebound here, because anything off of a zero base is a pretty significant rebound. So the potential for a quick rise and a turnaround in some of the economic conditions, like manufacturing, maybe even consumer sentiment to a degree. But back to normalized levels in just a couple of months away is just it's just stupid. It's reckless. But this is what the street does. I mean, this is what they do. They try to get you to believe in something so that you're willing to put money back in the broker's hands and hope and excitement builds and there's an opportunity and there's great things in the future. The problem is they're incompetent and clueless. It's embarrassing. I mean, it really is embarrassing that the industry does what it does. Except monkeys in suits is all these, or just these brokers and analysts. I mean, let's face it. They're getting paid to have you be hypnotized and believe. And we talked about this 100 times. It's a confidence game. Now, to be very clear, make sure you're listening to this. I am not saying it's not going to get better, because I know it will. It's going to get better. There's no question about that. I believe it is. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm not saying there's not great values that are out there in the market, because there are. There always are. But what I'm saying is to think that stocks in general concept here, can be properly valued even with interest rates at zero is absolutely insane. It's insane to believe that these analysts can properly, listen, they couldn't call the numbers when they could call the numbers. Economists are perpetually wrong, perpetually moving the needle because their estimates are so far off. The only reasons that they get it right is because they're right at the time when the report is released, and by then everything is factored in. And if they're wrong, they adjust it again so that they're closer. That's why we have the consensus numbers that we look at. We get the average of all these people and then put it into where expectations are, because that's really what the game is. The game is where are we versus expectations. So right now, expectations for the economy are very poor. Markets' expectations are a little bit better. But when we look at all of this and to think again that you could value the stocks or really figure out when that low is to say that, hey, you know what? The economics have bottomed. Earnings have bottomed. And what we're going to do now is we're going to buy in, because 6 months before the bottoming process in a recession is usually when stocks start to move. So really, that's the playbook that a lot of people are using. But they're throwing out the rest of the playbook. It's kind of like reading some instruction manual and stopping on step 5 of step 20. Whereas you need all those steps to really better understand what is going to be the way that this machine works, how to put it together. Because when you look at the instruction manual or the guide for recessions, they're oftentimes, if not pretty much the majority of the times, a second drop to bring back expectations to a more normalized level. And that's the playbook we're going with right now. As I explained last week, with a 1 foot in, 1 foot out, because we don't necessarily know if this time is going to be the same as that, a little bit different, or it's going to move right back up or come right back down or come back down slowly or come back down a little bit and then go higher. So it's okay. But my point is to try to follow these monkeys in suits that are now, you know, these are the people with all the books behind them in the Zoom meetings that have to have all their library behind them to show how smart they are and to tell us how they know better than everybody else, because this is what's going to happen. And then, of course, when you look at some of the major television shows, you know which ones I'm talking about, the business shows, that only bring on, or for the most part, about, I'll call it 9 to 1, bring on the bullish parties and talking about what's going to happen with the markets that, again, change their tune on an everyday basis. Some of them don't even actually do what they do with their client portfolios of what they talk about on the air. In other words, there's a lot of players out there that talk the game of stocks and all that, but yet they don't even implement that with stocks and the stocks they're talking about in their client portfolios. So what they use is just managers. There's nothing wrong with that, but pretty amazing how you have all this knowledge and not even giving it to us with what you do actually for a living. The media is all screwed up. Let's get that clear. Especially the financial media. And now what we have is even more geopolitical rhetoric that's ratcheting up. And now we have a recipe for some real questions that you have to look at when you're looking at the and analyzing the XX valuations that are in equities. Yeah, I mean, we have TNA, which is there is no alternative. But come on, that's not a good investing discipline for the long haul. And remember what we talked about last week again. And by the way, thank you for all the comments and the commentary on that episode. That was, I must have hit a nerve. It seems that we hit a nerve. I think we did, because people and many people said that they thought I was talking directly to them. If you haven't listened to episode 662, I think there was a couple of really good nuggets in there about the idea of dollar cost averaging, sitting on the sidelines, getting in, getting out, 1 foot in, 1 foot out, multifaceted dollar cost averaging approaches that are different than just the time base. Anyway, there's some really good things in psychology in there that I talked about. And so I got these, I think they were great emails, and thank you so much for those. You can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew. All that stuff comes directly to me. So we talked about this 1 foot in, 1 foot out. I explained the idea of multifaceted stuff. Okay, what we need to do now is try to keep your disciplined and decision-making process in check. What we don't want to do right now is succumb to false prophets that are essentially just shelling out sales to you and selling their services, oftentimes commission-based. Commission-based product sales. Well, they'll probably tell you there's no load because you're probably paying the back end somehow. But now's the time to trade carefully, and it's not necessarily, that doesn't mean conservatively, but thoughtfully. Thoughtfully. I've seen it. I get the emails just like you do. People don't, not everybody knows that I'm in this business. They just send me emails. They make calls to me. I get regular snail mail. And I got to tell you, there are a lot of bad, awful products being pushed right now. For example, there's these structured products that guarantee returns dependent on where an index closes 2 or 3 years from now. And some have merit, but many are just high cost, very complicated to understand, high commission deals that are brought to you by brokers. Question is, who do you want to make money on your money? Do you want the broker that's pitching commissions based on products that are, I guess the best way to describe them is opaque and completely difficult to understand? You know why I know it's difficult to understand? And you know why I know it's difficult for you to understand? I have an extremely difficult time understanding it because the prospectuses are hundreds of pages deep. The potential for a payoff is dependent on several different moves of a particular index. If then, up, not yes, but if that, it, what? If I hit this high watermark, I get this number, nothing over above, but I don't do this. And then if it hits that, I get maybe nothing, a 1% payment. If I hit the low, I could only lose upwards of the first 25% of the downside, but then I could lose even more of that. And what? And it goes on and on. And what if I want to get out early? What if? What if? There's no liquidity. That's just one example, just something I want to bring to you. But, and I'm not necessarily breaking on all the structured products, but these are very difficult and confusing. And in a time like where we are now, with a lot of uncertainty, the last thing I think we want to be doing is getting ourselves into something that is so, what is it? It's restrictive. It is difficult to discern and understand the entirety of it. Now is one of those times we're going to see more and more Shylocks come out with fancy products, trying to press your fear button. Click, click, click. Don't get sucked in. Don't fall for this. Let's take a breath. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in and breathe out and think about what you may be getting into, especially if you're a new investor that really hasn't had a lot of experience here. There's a lot of things that are going to look really good right now, and they're going to be coming fast and furious to your email box, to your telephone. Your friends are going to say, hey, talk to this guy. Hey, this guy, you know, Ralphie, you got to talk to Ralphie. He's got this unbelievable product. You can't lose any money. Check it out. Talk to him. You know what? You put some money in. You make money if it does this. You don't lose money if it does that. Okay, come on. Just be open to the fact that not every product is a good deal and understand what the cost factors are. The reason that we do investment advisory and we charge a management fee and don't make any money on the, you know, commission from a sale of a mutual fund, let's say, is because we want to be on the same side of the table as you. We want to be able to earn money with you and be able to provide you with advice that is clear from any kind of bias. I don't want to have a situation that I'm like, you know, hey, you know, John Smith came in as a client. He's got $250,000. He wants this. And I'm thinking, you know what? If I do this, I'll make a 10% commission. If I do that, it's a 3% commission. If I do this, there's no commission. Which one am I going to do? I'll sell them the 10% commission product. You know, that is an inherent problem in our industry when it comes to commission-based investment brokers, that you are no longer aligned with the best interest of your client. The best interest of the sale and how much money you're going to make on it as the broker is really what happens to be the overriding important factor in all this. So just be careful. Just be aware. This is one of those times you need to be aware. Now, quick PSA, public service announcement, Mondays, each and every Monday, we do the pop-up Q&A webinar where you can ask any question that you want at all about finance, investing, money, whatever it is, economy, outlook, whatever. This is your chance. It's a freebie. So go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, top right. There's a little button that says, hey, register. We're going to do these for as long as there's interest. And so far, there's no interest that is waning each and every Monday at 4:30 in the afternoon. No question is too small, too insignificant. If you have a question, even if you don't have a question, you know what? Come on, because we talk about what's going on during the week, what's happening, and go over a lot of the things that are really important. And maybe it will spark something there for you that you'll just say, you know what? Hey, I want to ask about this. So whatever it is, I want you to be there. Check it out over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. It's a Zoom webinar that we do with interactive Q&A. All right, let's move on to a quick discussion about geopolitics. So over the last week, 2 weeks maybe, we're seeing a pretty big ramp of the finger pointing and blame. And some rightfully so, I think. But this can be impactful on your portfolios. And the one particular one, obviously, is that China is in the crosshairs. There's no question about that. I don't think from anybody's viewpoint that China is being the one that, hey, you let the bug out, man. That's a problem. This is on top of the concern over the years that China has really taken over the manufacturing, become the second largest economy by any single country in the world. Talking about, you know, dominance and possibly even changing the reserve currency of the world from the dollar maybe to something else. And there's been a lot of bad blood with the trade deals and, of course, with President Trump initially talking about the concern about them stealing our products, intellectual property, bad trade deals. I mean, all of that, right? So on top of that, now we have this coronavirus, which is now just pushed this whole thing up to a whole different level. So the Senate passed a bill this week that would look to delist some Chinese companies that are state-owned and I guess don't meet specific requirements to be listed, or could be that they could be state-owned entities. They don't have the specific accounting processes that are in. And again, this is another country, so they have different rules than we have here. And this could be bad news for some companies that now trade on U.S. exchanges. Now, we'll have to see what this goes to full legislation, gets permanent and enacted into law. But we also saw a power grab in China this week that is looking to take some of quote-unquote special measures, security measures, in Hong Kong, which is probably going to pave the way for more control by mainland China over Hong Kong. Not good. This has been going on for, how long has this been going on for? This infighting with the independence and the theoretical granted you have independence till we tell you you don't have independence anymore, independence from China to Hong Kong. And right now we have this, one country, two governances, we'll call it, okay? Different type of way of managing the whole Hong Kong, much more capitalistic, not that China's not, but communism. Communistic capitalism in China and independent democratic capitalism in Hong Kong. I guess it's probably a loosely good way of describing it. So let's just say that Hong Kong wasn't quite happy with this new revelation. Hang Seng was down 5% on the news, dragging a lot of companies down. You got to wonder whether or not many companies that have, because you know, Hong Kong's a financial hub. And you got to wonder if there's going to be a big concern by companies that are in Hong Kong, that do a lot of trading in Hong Kong, if they're just going to say, you know what, the hell with this? These riots, these protests, this power grab, and maybe we don't want to be here. Maybe we just can't be here. And we're going to move our offices to, I don't know, London, New York, somewhere, anywhere but here. So there's more problems than that. I mean, this is just, you know, the continuation of the power grab of China for Hong Kong. So this is a real problem. You know, they have their own currency, the Hong Kong dollar versus the renminbi, or the yuan in China. But China is also pulling their GDP projections for 2020. And this is interesting because it's kind of a new twist, because they've been putting out guidance for decades, and then miraculously, as we know, magically, somehow, meeting that self-provided goal every single time. We're going to have a 6.8% GDP growth, and magically, they come in 6.8%. Hey, we did it. We're wonderful. That's changed, because now they're pulling that. I think, I'm not sure what it means, actually, but I don't know how long it's going to go on for. It doesn't seem too good. Obviously, they do not have the understanding of really what's happening either. And probably they saw that because many companies in the U.S. are pulling their guidance, that maybe it's not the biggest deal because markets seem to be saying, you know what, at least if we don't see it, we don't care about it. Therefore, we don't know about it and we can push up stocks higher. So if that's one of their goals, I don't know. But expectations that China will still see a positive growth for 2020 are pretty strong, looking at under 2%, maybe 1%. But that's off a 6% growth rate that was originally expected. So this is a big number. I don't know how they're going to get away with continuing to have a positive GDP number for the year. That seems a little bit difficult at best. So the other problem we have, not only are we seeing the rhetoric in the United States be ramped up, the finger pointing about, United States saying, I think that virus came from there and, you know, the Wuhan flu and all that. But the problem is there are multiple parties looking to get back at China for all of the bad things that they did over the years with the stealing intellectual property, cornering the global manufacturing market. Several countries are now coming together. They're kind of ganging up to try to take China down. And at the same time, this is a pretty, I guess, a fragile situation. It's a problem because you do that and you start breaking apart the confidence in what we have with regard to manufacturing. And you could see major supply chain disruptions and a compromise to the entire global manufacturing process. And if China wants to start saying, you know what, screw you, enough. Do you realize how much they provide in terms of certain metals, pharmaceuticals, basic goods, final products, of course, are a no-brainer, electronics, the rare earth metals, for batteries and for other technology, electronics. The list goes on and on and on. So now what are you going to do with that? You add this situation that we've already have. You add the anger of the coronavirus and countries blaming China for the outbreak, the lack of transparency, and even a pretty bad situation for China. And it's hard to see how they're going to reemerge anytime soon that is going to be in an unscarred basis. I just don't see it. Already, several countries are looking to shift their supply chain away from China, diversify, which makes sense. I mean, if you're beating up on this guy and you say to him, you know what, listen, I'm going to keep on pounding you in the face, but do me a favor. I still want you to be my friend. And for a while, I was like, yeah, of course I'm going to be your friend. Hit me. Hit him. You bloody him up. Now you start, I'm going to stab you a little bit, just a little bit, just going to poke you a little bit with this knife. You're going to be my friend? Yeah, we'll be friends. Just, don't cut too deep. We'll be all right. Now you start blasting away, taking a baseball bat to the knees, and maybe that friend is like, you know what? I don't want to be your friend anymore, you know? I mean, come on, let's face it. You can't keep on smacking them in the head and believe that they're going to just take it. They're going to retaliate somehow. They have to. Now, while moving the supply chain away from China and diversification of the manufacturing process and even the raw goods is going to be pretty good for some countries, you're going to see a beneficial impact for certain emerging markets, whether it's a Vietnam, possibly Mexico for that matter. And those countries are going to fight like hell to grab some of that action. There's no question. It's going to turn them against China as well. So now you're going to have not only the major countries ganging up on China, but probably some of the emerging markets that do a lot of business with them saying, you know what? If we're mean to you too, if we shut you down, if we close you off, maybe we'll get business and it will really help our economy. So you're going to see of all this, winners and losing. Winners and losers emerging. There's going to be some losing going on here. There's going to be some winning going on. Clearly, it's going to get ugly. It's going to be pretty fascinating to watch this unfold and troubling at the same time. Now, obviously, if there is a change in our government and the election brings in, let's say, Biden, and I don't know who his VP is going to be, it may be a different stance on the impact on how we treat China. I don't know. Is it going to be as harsh? Is it going to be harsher? I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't think they're going to lay up too much. I would think that this is going to be a way for them to rally the troops around them against the common enemy. We've seen that before. So stay tuned. Be aware. I'm still trying to decide. You know, we have a lighter than normal non-US or in the emerging market area exposure. I'm kind of curious if we need to really cut that back even further. It's light. It's very light. But who needs the aggravation if emerging markets and of the emerging market ETF and many of the indices, about 40% is China. So what if China can't recover for years and decades because of this? Big problem. And let's not even talk about, I'm not even bringing the discussion here about a reemergence and a spike of the virus. We're already seeing that the potential for another lockdown in China in a region north of Wuhan with 100 million people may be forced to lock down again if they haven't done so already, which we may or may not know. So lots to go over there, lots to think about. Let's just get back to staying away from the monkeys in suits. Realize that China, we're going to have finger pointing, going to be an issue there for a long period of time. As I see it, not a lot of clearing. Finally, let's take a walk over to the economics that everybody wants to know about and what's going on this week coming up. Of course, Monday, markets are closed. Memorial Day, no information coming out, which is good. At least here, the rest of the world is open, but in the United States, we are closed. On Tuesday, we get the Case-Shiller Home Price Index and Consumer Confidence Number for May. Expectations are for the Case-Shiller to be up about 4%. Now, I was curious. I was thinking about this as I was putting this together today and wondering about that particular number, the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. The 20 cities, the one that we look at on that Tuesday. But you can also look at the 10 city. You can look at a variety of other factors. And I'm kind of curious, not only from this report, but other reports that we're going to see on the housing market, if in fact there's going to be a change. And if single-family homes and that sector are going to see an incredible amount of increase in interest as compared to multifamilies over the next several months. The question I have, is there going to be a major exodus from crowded metropolitan areas and a shift to single-family homes in more rural or I guess less densely populated areas? Probably a better way to think about it. And this could be a trend. I mean, I think this would help the housing market for single-family homes and even in a recessionary environment. If the overriding factor here is all about health and nobody really wants to deal with being involved in the potential of, I'm not getting in that elevator if there's anyone in it. I'm not getting in that elevator, but I'm on the 12th floor. What the hell am I going to do? There's nowhere for me to get out of here. Now, maybe some people have patios and outdoor verandas on their apartments. They can see outside. A lot of people in Manhattan, you open a window, you see a brick wall next to you. That's it. You don't know if it's daytime or nighttime, raining or snowing. I've been in some of those apartments. I've seen them. Not the same everywhere around the country, but a lot of people still believe that, you know what? Why do I want to be cooped up, cramped up, if this thing is ever going to happen again? This is the most horrible experience. And they may look to get a little bit of grass in their backyard, maybe a pool, maybe some trees, maybe an area they could walk around. So I'm not sure if this trade-off is going to be positive or negative in terms of the total housing market, but it's going to be interesting. Question is, if we have a lot more apartments on the market, is that going to bring down the whole pricing, or is it going to push everybody because there is this move into single families, which pushes those up, but yet the multifamily housing suffers? We're going to be watching that. On Wednesday, the Fed's beige book is coming out. Regional manufacturing and overall business insights are going to be gleaned from that. Not a lot, probably the same as we're thinking. There's going to be a continuation of the same. On Thursday, initial and continuing claims, possibly seeing about another 2 million. I think about 2 million was the number. Initial claims for unemployment insurance and about 25 million or so on the continuing claims also. Durable goods for April's coming out, also expecting a shrink or a drop by 20%. Then we're going to see the second estimate for Q1 GDP, about negative 4.8%. No change there. On Friday, personal income and spending for April, both down. That would be expected. Also, probably one of the more important things that we'll see on Friday is the PCE prices, which is the personal consumption expenditures. That is the Fed's kind of a favorite inflation guide. Expectations are for a negative 0.5%, which pushes that into the deflationary area again, therefore bullying the hopes that the Fed is going to be even more accommodative or at least not change their stance, which they've said they're not changing for some time to come. So lots happening then. Other than that, we're going to end the show here. Again, I hope you have a great Memorial Day. I want to make sure that everybody's involved in our Monday pop-up Q&A webinars over on the Zoom meeting so you can register. You have to register. So go over there and register on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Until next week, thank you so much for joining me. Have a great Memorial Day. I hope you get out to do what you want to do safely with your family, friends, and just really have a great, great weekend. Thanks so much for joining me. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.